Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Duke Health, offering food, medication delivery, and transportation to communities hardest hit by COVID-19. It's all through a special partnership with North Carolina agencies and 16 community-based organizations. Learn more about Duke's COVID-19 response at dukehealth.org.
This is Tested from WUNC, a look at how we're responding to the day's challenges in North Carolina and the South. I'm Jason DeBruin. In a few weeks, the major healthcare program that serves low-income and disabled North Carolinians will get a total overhaul. On July 1st, Medicaid in North Carolina will launch what's been labeled a transformation, a process that's been years in the making. Here's a snapshot of the fee-for-service model, the way it's been for years, but will soon phase out. A Medicaid patient goes to a provider. Then that doctor bills the Department of Health and Human Services. The more than 2 million people who qualify for Medicaid in North Carolina get about $15 billion in healthcare per year. The state taxpayer covers about one quarter of the costs. The federal government picks up most of the rest. Now, the new system. Broadly speaking, the change will introduce a new administrative layer. Instead of the state paying providers directly, DHHS will pay private third-party companies lump sums. Those companies will then handle all the billing invoices providers give them. If these companies pay out less in medical claims than they get from the state, they make a profit. But the process has caused some confusion and even frustration from Medicaid beneficiaries.
I'm really concerned. We needed an overhaul, but not this.
Alicia Jones lives in Wendell, North Carolina, just east of Raleigh. Two of her grandchildren, both teenagers, are Medicaid recipients for mental health services. Alicia has been helping them get everything in order ahead of the transformation, but the process hasn't been easy.
The information is not consistent across the board. For instance, when we go to the information sessions about the transfer, we're supposed to be able to pick who we want, call the number, and that's that. It doesn't go like that. I think this whole system, they just got all these people in and doing this and doing that, when it should be really, really simple. Okay, this is what you can do. Okay, we pick C, we call C, and it's done. That's what I'm thinking it's gonna be, not all this other stuff.
Alicia has been diligently doing her research and working to ensure her grandkids are in the right spot come July 1st. But she says there hasn't been a streamlined source of communication coming from the state health department.
And it's certain things that I feel that they should tell us. Like, they don't tell us that we won't receive any information or nothing to be concrete until July 1st. I understand that. But I was told by one provider that, okay, well, you can just sign up with us, but then you're going to have to remember to come back and pick a provider. I was like, because all the providers weren't listed yet. I said, no, you all should not have started this process if everyone was not listed yet.
Alicia's frustration echoes that of Medicaid beneficiaries across the state, even as transformation is on the horizon. In a recent poll conducted for North Carolina for Better Medicaid, more than 60% of respondents said they knew very little or nothing at all about the Medicaid transformation. This despite the fact that open enrollment was offered in March, April, and May.
When it comes to North Carolina Medicaid, you now have different paths to care. NC Medicaid Managed Care lets you choose a health plan with the providers and services best for you. Enroll by May 14th.
DHHS has a lot of information on its website, and Health Secretary Dr. Mandy Cohen says lots of people have been trying to get good information out to beneficiaries. Of course, she's also been preoccupied with the pandemic. Here's Dr. Cohen at a recent media briefing.
We want to make sure that if beneficiaries have questions, one, they can call their doctor that they've seen, or they can call our Medicaid helpline, and we can be sure to answer their questions. But we also have a lot of policies in place to make sure that as we do this transition, we're protecting beneficiaries. So if they don't like the plan they either chose or we enrolled them in, they can change for up to 90 days. So there's a lot of flexibility to both protect our doctors and our hospitals in this change, as well as our beneficiaries, and give folks flexibility. So hopefully this one can be a smooth transition.
And of course, everyone has been dealing with a pandemic for the past year. It has taken a lot of attention. So it's maybe understandable that some people have missed information about the change in Medicaid.
There are, you know, lots of consumers who maybe are confused and still, you know, don't understand, because the bandwidth and the energy to pay attention to health has been about COVID and can I even go in my doctor's office in person?
This is Sierra Zachary. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Health Policy and Management at UNC's Gilling School of Global Public Health. She says launching a new version of Medicaid during a pandemic creates an extra lift for DHHS.
There are so many other prioritized needs that I think, you know, launching into such a big change in Medicaid and how people will access their care, I think it will be maybe some bumps in the road, but I know that the department has really been trying to figure out best ways to outreach to people and continue to educate them during this transition.
What is going to be transformed? When people say Medicaid transformation and a switch to managed care to, I'm sure a lot of people, doesn't really mean anything. They sort of don't understand that. Maybe describe what is managed care and how is that different from what we've, you know, the fee-for-service model that we've had.
So historically, most of Medicaid has been fee-for-service, meaning that when a person goes in to see a doctor or a healthcare professional, that professional can kind of charge for each service that they bill. The idea with managed care, and what we've heard even outside of Medicaid, is that healthcare costs have been steadily increasing. And one way to try to think about controlling costs and thinking about more stability, for lack of a better term, is like kind of clumping service together. So maybe thinking about how can providers think smarter about how they, what services they are providing, so that people aren't just going to the doctor every week, or maybe overusing or not getting the correct services that they truly need to meet their health needs. So with managed care, there are these provider-led entities that will be in North Carolina that are going to maybe like oversee someone's overall healthcare needs. So instead of, you know, to kind of streamline, and when we think about the budget impacts, is that per person, these managed care entities will receive kind of like a lump sum of money. So again, that helps people think more efficiently about what the needs are for people, instead of just maybe thinking about services as they come up.
Of course, the flip side of that is that the incentive structure could be such that these middle agencies just simply deny services because they want to, you know, refuse as many claims as possible in order to keep as much money as possible. Now, that's a pretty pessimistic view on my part, obviously. I don't mean to suggest that that's going to happen, but maybe talk a little bit about that push and pull, or that tension between, yeah, how do you really make an entire population healthier while also reducing costs? And is that actually in tension with, you know, we're just going to deny a bunch of claims?
Yeah, Jason, I think you bring up a great point and a concern that is completely, you know, reasonable to have. You know, many other states have managed care. There are many other states have had like lawsuits, and we've heard stories of people being denied services because, you know, managed care organizations may, you know, focus on these savings that they want because they aren't able to bill for each service. And they do want to, you know, be fiscally healthy as well. So I think, you know, many advocates in the state of North Carolina have been pushing for transparency. You know, I know that the department is having the managed care organizations submit data regularly. So hopefully that will be one way. There's going to be an ombudsman program so that, you know, patients, Medicaid beneficiaries can report if they feel like they are being overburdened or denied services that they feel that they deserve. I think there are also other strategies that were, you know, innovative, and hopefully it's the reason why many people are looking at North Carolina. The fact that there is guidance about addressing social determinants of health as well, knowing that while clinical healthcare is really important, there are many other social factors such as like food security and transportation. So I think the fact that we want to integrate social services in addition to, regular, what we think of typical healthcare services, I think that's really important. There's also been a push for like these integrated health teams so that there aren't these silos, where providers aren't talking to each other, that people will have this more wholesome, integrated approach to their health. So I think that may be another way of decreasing this push and pull if we have teams that are working together and are working more efficiently and effectively. But I think at least in the beginning, to make sure that no one kind of drops off, it will be important to like maybe have people giving those reminder calls. And I especially think about the child population. You know, when you're a child, there's so many well child visits, immunizations that they need. We don't want children to lose those important critical doctor's visits in the beginning that really help determine their growth and development, which, can have lifelong impacts. So there is some importance to that, even if there might be some annoyances.
Whenever the word Medicaid is mentioned in North Carolina, it immediately becomes a politically charged hot-button issue. To be clear, this transformation is not Medicaid expansion, which has consistently been a lightning rod in North Carolina politics. But creating a new managed care system has taken a different tone.
I almost hate to even say this out loud because it might cause a political implosion. But North Carolina has sort of accidentally been doing bipartisan healthcare reform. It's like nobody seems to realize that.
Don Taylor is a professor at the Sanford School of Public Health at Duke University. He's also the director of the university's Social Science Research Institute.
So the McCrory administration, the last governor, near the end of his term, he submitted a waiver request for what has, become this Medicaid transformation program. The waiver that he put in was really more of an outline of what a waiver would look like. Then the Cooper administration comes in, and of course, Governor Cooper framed things around expansion first and foremost. That was his, top priority. And I think a lot of people figured he would dump the privatization notion overboard. But in fact, he, hired Mandy Cohen, who was a top Obama administration official. And basically, Mandy Cohen and the Dems, the Democrats in North Carolina, put the meat on the bones of Governor McCrory's sort of broad vision. And Mandy Cohen and Governor Cooper's team put the details on board. The word privatization, some people hear that as terrible. Other people think that's great. Will it work? I mean, as compared to what? As the perfect system that we don't have? No, it won't work that well. It's a move ahead. And everything's really been delayed a year by the pandemic. And, so now it's come out of that. And we'll see what comes, next.
Well, I know it was one of the things that particularly leadership, Senator Berger kept saying was that we have to fix it before we can expand it.
This is not the time for us to take on a new program with the expense of the new program, all at a time when we are just now trying to get the Department of Health and Human Services not only to deal with coronavirus, but to deal with a major shift in how we deal with our current Medicaid population. So now is not the time. It is not the right policy, in my view.
And so now presumably it's fixed, and yet there's little talk of expansion, or at least the word expansion. I know I've seen it. It does seem to be increasingly popular that if we call it something different, it might have a better chance. And I wonder specifically, like you said, if the Republicans actually got a good amount of what they wanted out of transformation, and there does seem to be pretty broad agreement between what the McCrory administration wanted and how the Cooper administration has carried that out. Is there the possibility that there was a little bit of good faith on the one side, so now there might be a little bit of good faith on the other?
I mean, the the Dems did the push the rock up the hill, right, putting the stuff in place. And if it all goes bad, it's going to be on them. So Senator Berger is definitely not going to love it if it all goes bad. I can promise you that. So there was a lot of good faith there from where I would sit as an analyst, and very little good faith with respect to the key Dem priority. And in fact, I really believe, just in a policy sense, that for Republicans who claim competition is key, that, you know, expansion actually gives that a better chance. I mean, you know, Senator Berger's soundbite of "we'll fix it and then expand," that's a great soundbite, but it really, that it doesn't make a lot of sense in policy terms, in part because some of what needs to be fixed is how to deal with folks who are uninsured.
Another thing that's sort of interesting to me is that, you know, North Carolina is one of the few states actually that still had fee-for-service. So, you know, most states had already transitioned to something like this. Are there possible lessons to be learned from other states where perhaps they've had rockier starts that since it's been done so many times, maybe ours could potentially avoid some of those pitfalls?
Yeah, I think there's a chance for that. You also have in Secretary Cohen, and some of the folks that work with her, you know, they had long experience of seeing Medicaid waivers. And so that just meant in the framing of the documents for what had to be included for a company to, you know, apply. You know, I think there's some hope that there's probably been some lessons learned and maybe we'll do it a little better. I think also, you know, the state of North Carolina, it's got some pretty well-developed health systems. I would have some cautious optimism that we might avoid some of the, you know, some of the pitfalls that have come before. You know, we had some managed care before, but it was really only for a very narrow swath of the spend, really the you know, the cheapest part of the system. So in that sense, anytime you go from not much or nothing to something, you have, you know, more of a chance to find an impact that you might hope for.
Of course, everybody's telling you yes, 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 yes to everything. So we'll see. I hate we have to be in the wait and see game, but we'll see.
Back in Wendell, Alicia Jones is getting ready for the Medicaid transformation on July 1st and what it will mean for her grandkids' health care. But she still wants to see the state health department do more in the time that's left.
They need to work out the kinks. And so that if you do need or want to change after July 1st, it should be a very simple process. Nothing as hard as all of this stuff that has led us up to this. Because we started this, pre-COVID, kind of got put to the back burner. So take this time to fix, you know, to get everything right and as less painful for parents and families as possible.
That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Jason DeBruin.